This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
It's Wednesday, June 12th. The college baseball season continues, but of course Arkansas' season is over. The Razorbacks out here in their home regional for the second year in a row. We'll talk about that today on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. We'll also talk about the other things we've seen in this year's NCAA tournament. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Kendall King, where it's all about teamwork. Building brands around a design concept, Kendall King takes pride in their skill sets and displays and signing, as well as dot-com photography, content creation, and influencer marketing. The bases are loaded, and the Kendall King team is bringing it home. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
And we welcome you to our final podcast of 2024. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter here in our Fayetteville studio. Of course, Arkansas with a disappointing end to its 2024 season, losing in its home regional. It felt a lot like the year before when TCU came in here, and you know, this year it was K-State. There's something about purple teams from the Big 12 coming into bomb. I think they gotta love that. If they see Fayetteville on their regional selection next year, but. Bubba, there are a lot of similarities, I think, between what happened last year and this year, and then there are some differences. I mean, you know, last year they did battle their way back into the regional championship game. This year they didn't do that. They lost to SEMO. I just feel like, you know, we knew TCU was a really good team coming in last year. They'd been on a roll before they came to Fayetteville. You didn't see that from these teams coming in this year. You had, you know, Louisiana Tech was like 8-2 in its last 10, and they didn't play well at the regional. SEMO was kind of the same way. K-State, I think they were 5-5 coming in. This one really surprised me a lot more than last year.
Yeah, same here. When I saw the regional picks, I felt really good about it. To be honest with you, I overlooked K-State. Like when I was doing my research, I kind of looked at them and I'm like, and I kind of put them aside. Mm-hmm. I looked at Louisiana Tech and I thought, you know what, SEMO, they can swing it, but they're not going to have the pitching to shut us down. So. You know, I thought they might score some runs, but I didn't think, I don't think anyone saw this coming, to be mm-hmm. honest with you. Now, you know, we'll probably break down games in a minute, but I still think that the game with Hagan Smith was kind of fluky. Mm-hmm. You know, Phil Elson and I talked about it. You know, the 0-2 pitch, base hit to right, it's off the plate. You know, if it's elevated a couple inches, guy fouls it off. The base hit, Jones hit over. Ben McLaughlin's head, mm-hmm. the high chopper, just fluke. A 16th of an inch on the bat, that's a routine play to Ben. I mean, just so many little things like that happen. Now, where Hagan got in trouble is the two leadoff walks. Mm-hmm. Played right into K-State's hand. They were able to sack bunt. But I think if we play that regional 10 more times, we win it 10 times. I really do.
Hagan announced an All-America today. By the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, sixth time in program history. We were talking about all the players who have been multi-time All-Americans for Arkansas, and it's a pretty notable list. I don't have it right here in front of me. I think I can tell you off the top of my head, though. You got Hagan, Nick Schmidt, David Walling, Jeff King, Philip Stidham, and Kevin McReynolds. I mean, that's a heck of a list to be included with.
That's what you asked me when I walked in, and I thought, yeah, I think I know it. And I got two.
You failed. You got an F on the test.
I can't believe I left off. Well, first of all, Nick Schmidt, I left him off.
Yeah.
But Jeff King, I mean, I was watching Jeff King play at George Cole Field, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, I wanted to be like Jeff King. So,
you did a good impression.
I appreciate that.
But where I was going with this is that it's tough for Hagan because his legacy as an Arkansas pitcher, he's probably the best pitcher that's ever come through here, one of the very best. But you always have to talk about those regional games with him, and so it's really tough, you know. So how do you balance the fact that hey, Hagan Smith outdueled Paul Skeens? And Hagan Smith had 17 strikeouts in 6 innings against a really good Oregon State team. And Hagan Smith was pretty good on the run to the 22 College World Series. They don't get to the World Series probably without him. The strikeout of Rock Riggio over in Stillwater was a huge moment in that run. But you do have to talk about those two regional starts. And it's so bizarre to me that, you know, we talk about Arkansas being eliminated 2 years in a row. They had it set up like they wanted it.
Yeah.
Winner's bracket, Hagan Smith on the mound. You wouldn't want it any other way. And for whatever reason, this is the randomness of baseball, he has the two worst outings probably of his entire career in those two regional games.
Well, last year was different. Playing TCU, I mean, they were hot. I think this year, I write it up as just, you know, fluky, just one of those things that happened in the game of baseball. I really do. Like I said, if we play that game 10 more times, Hagen wins that game 10 times. Mm. Now, I don't like the whole talk of – they talk about, like, NFL quarterbacks. Well, he hadn't won the big game yet.
Yeah,
well,
I don't like that either.
You know, I don't like that. You're either great or you're not great. Mm. Now, there's a clutch player, too. I mean, Tom Brady, clutch, right? I mean, there's certain guys that are clutch. I don't judge Hagen any different, and I know there was a lot of negativity out there. I think he's probably the best pitcher to ever come through here. I've never seen anyone dominate like him in the SEC. I mean, to do it against SEC hitters is remarkable. I think that was a giant fluke what happened. The thing is, the two walks. Now, they weren't like four-pitch walks. I think one was a six-pitch walk, one was a seven-pitch walk, but you still can't walk two K-State hitters after we throw up a two spot in the top of the fifth. So, to me, it doesn't change the way I view Hagen at all. Now, I'm in the minority there, I think. I think a lot of people look at it and they put an asterisk beside it. I don't.
I think you just have to kind of step back. I mean, if you're and I think that we will appreciate what he's done more as more time is removed from that regional start. You're right. It was not like the year before in a lot of ways. TCU jumped on him from the start. There, of course, was the rain delay that caused him, you know, not to start on Saturday, right. and he's starting on Sunday all of a sudden. This one, he pitched really well, I thought, for four innings. And I just had the feeling that when they went up 2-0 in the top of the fifth, it's like that's the ball game, because you got Hagen on the mound, pretty rested bullpen. You know, if you get even a somewhat normal start from Hagen, and you pair that with what Ben Bibee did out of the bullpen in that game, they're in the winner's bracket, and we're probably having a different discussion today.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I know between innings, Phil said off the air, come on, Hagen, throw up a zero right here. Because if we throw up a zero right there, I mean, we're golden. It just didn't happen. Now, I go back and look at the day before. I mean, we're up 8-0 on SEMO. Who would have ever thought we would have had to use Will McIntyre, Christian Fouch, Gabe Gackel, and Jake Faraday in that game?
Yeah.
You know, when we're up 8-0, you know, next thing you know, it's 8-8. I mean, I
wasn't
thought that
surprising.
Was, oh, my gosh.
I thought, you know, 8-0 with this bullpen, it's, I mean, you're on cruise control. Yeah. And it wasn't like it was, you know, the slow build to 8-8. It was like, bam.
I know.
It was amazing.
Well, and I think that was kind of, I don't know, but I still felt good when we came back and we scored. We ended up winning 17-9, kind of going away. I felt really good. I thought, okay, whew, we got that one out of our system. Now let's go get them. But, you know, that's baseball, Matt, and I love it. And the beauty of it is, think of another sport where SEMO can come in and do what they did. I mean, think about it. In football, it would never – they can't come in.
I remember
in
the last
beat.
Time SEMO came to Arkansas for a football game. It wasn't pretty.
But isn't that the beauty of baseball? As much as I love baseball, it'll rip your freaking heart out. And that's the thing, man. It's anything can happen. You know, you get a guy on the mound that's hot. Wilma had a good start against us. He's got horrible numbers. I mean, he'd been getting lit up in the OVC. He just had a good day against us. Hit his spots with his fastball, upper 80s, breaking ball, 60.
He threw 66. A 62-mile-an-hour breaking ball in that game.
That. It looked like a – it was like the – I always talk about the Bugs Bunny changeup. It was the Bugs Bunny curveball. It just went up there, and I can't remember who he threw it to. It might have been Aloy, way out front on it. And the thing about that pitch, though, you can see it out of his hand. It's got a hump. So if you're a hitter, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Out of his hand, it has a hump, so you know immediately, that's a breaking ball. But, you know, you're looking at almost 30 miles an hour from the curveball to the fastball. And that's a tough adjustment. Then he mixed in that little 76-mile-an-hour slider, slurve, whatever you want to call it. Oh, sweeper. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like a lot of times Grambling or UAPB or teams like that will come in on a Tuesday night, and they'll throw these guys that are throwing – pitches like that, and we'll see the Arkansas hitters. It might take them an inning or two innings, maybe three innings in some cases, to get on top of that pitch. That's on a Tuesday night in February. It's a whole different level of pressure when you're trying to do that in an elimination type setting.
Okay, so answer me this. I listened to an interview with, I think it was Mike Rooney, and he was talking about Fayetteville regionals, and he was looking back at our past history. He said we play tight at home. I don't know if he came right out and said it. He alluded to the fact he compared us to Ole Miss
in
regionals and super regionals playing tight at home. He compared us to Ole Miss, which really for me that sucks. That kind of boils my blood. But yeah, he said that you know, is there a tightness when it comes to Fayetteville regionals? And
I might be fair the last 2 years. I think if you go back before that, I mean, look at what the 18 and 19 teams did. Those 18 and 19 teams didn't play tight in game three of their super regionals. They beat the snot out of South Carolina and Ole Miss. So I don't know. Maybe I think that, you know, for better or worse, what people remember about postseason in Fayetteville right now, people have short-term memories. They remember North Carolina State, and they remember TCU, and they remember K-State and SEMO. I mean, it's so – I don't know. Maybe long-term, I don't know that it's fair. Short-term, there may be something there because – they've been great at home the last 2 years. They were 34-3 at home before the last two games of the season this year. I mean, they hadn't lost back-to-back home games since I think 22 was the last time it happened against Vanderbilt. So, I don't know. It's I go back to the randomness of baseball is so hard to explain. It really is.
How
else do you explain Florida winning five in a row and getting to the College World Series? They hadn't had a five-game win streak, Bubba, since February. That's when they're playing, you know, directional U.
Okay, now, I said Florida's – I wouldn't want to be in their regional.
Yep.
I've liked Florida all year. I look at Florida a lot like I look at Ole Miss in 22.
Mm-hmm.
When we played them in 22, I'm looking at them, I'm like, how is this team not winning? And I looked at Florida the same way, and I'm kind of on the Florida bandwagon right now, to be honest with you.
We'll talk more about the College World Series teams here in a minute, but for Florida, they just had freshman pitching that just took a long time to grow up, and they're finally, you know, pitching. And I think that's kind of scary for the SEC next year because now all of a sudden you're seeing what these guys can do, and they're, you know, I mean, unless transfer portal comes calling, they're going to be in the fold for Florida for the next year or two. So, but we'll get to that here in just a minute. Want to note that Gabe Gackel and Colin Fisher were named to the Freshman All-America team this week. They are the 27th and 28th Razorback Freshman All-Americans, the first since Hagan and Brady Tiger did it in 2022. I was not surprised to see Gackel on it. I put him on my ballot. For Fisher, that was a little bit of a surprise. And I think it also underscored a little bit of, you know, we overlooked. Maybe not overlooked is the right word, but there was a tendency to overlook at the end of the year who they were missing in the bullpen. I mean, Colin Fisher, when Mason Molina and Brady Tiger aren't pitching well down the stretch, if he's healthy, he moves into the starting rotation because of what he was doing on Tuesday and Wednesdays. You know, they had Hunter Dietz was out at the end of the year. Cooper Dossett was not available. Obviously, Tigert was out. But for Fisher, I think that the freshman All-America thing for him the other day kind of underscored just how much they were missing when they didn't have him.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and you look at Hunter Dietz also. Mm-hmm. Cooper Dossett was one that came in. Cooper got some big outs for us later in the year until he hurt his arm throwing that cutter. There were some pieces missing, but I think on the starting pitching role, Phil had some unbelievable numbers last week. We were talking about it and talking about starting pitching just – where we were and then how, you know, you're looking at three quarters of the way through the season, you're all of a sudden the identity of your team changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go from a team that's just relying on starting pitching and defense, scoring enough runs to win, all of a sudden you really have one starter you can rely on. I don't think Brady was healthy, and I don't think Molina was right. And so all of a sudden you're kind of changing the way you view a weekend, and that's hard to do mid stride to all of a sudden, okay, now we, you know, this amount of runs isn't going to win. Now we've got to start scoring more runs, and you know, kind of it's tough to change that identity of your team right in the middle of a season.
Yeah, and I wrote that after the regional. I said they just lacked an identity in the regional. They didn't have pitching, and they had hits, but they didn't have the timely hits. And that was really the thing that hurt them in the regionals. That, I mean, they had a ton of opportunities to plate runs against K-State. They out-hit K-State like 13-5.
Yep.
And
K-State made two errors.
Yeah,
that's something I was going to bring up.
That stat line is just – you look at that stat line, take away the runs scored, 13-5 and 2-0 in errors, and you would think it's a runaway for one team, and it just wasn't the case.
Yeah, you look, especially with Hagen on the mound, you look at that and you're like, oh, we killed them that game. You know, we blew them out.
You know, and hitting with runners in scoring position was not a problem against SEMO in game one. Right. They scored 17 runs. They popped, what, three-run home runs. They had six home runs in the game. But it was an issue against K-State and SEMO in games two and three.
Yeah. Oh, it's hard to think back. I had a rough weekend watching Super Regionals. It's just hard, you know, because – you know, you kind of build towards that all year, and you're like, okay, you know, we've got a Super Regional this weekend. You kind of mark stuff out on your schedule so you don't have a lot going on that weekend, and then, boom, you're not playing, and it's tough.
It's abrupt.
Yeah, and I know I'm sitting here with a pity party. It's way harder for DVH and the staff and all the players because I know how much work they put in, but, you know, it's tough. But
yeah, I mean,
but still, SEC West, 5 out of 6 years. 20 games in the SEC, that's impressive. I don't care. We didn't finish it, but that's still a lot to hang your hat on.
Yeah, it is. Good programs go through lulls. I mean, think about Kansas basketball. They won a national championship 2 years ago. The other 5 years in that six-year run, they haven't been past the first weekend. So it just happens sometimes. Yeah. You go through these lulls when you're a good program. Arkansas, they've been to the World Series a bunch of times. There's no real reason to think that they're not going to get back there. You know, sometimes it just comes – I think it comes down to matchups. It comes down to maybe different things going on with your personnel. The pitching looked tired for Arkansas at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And do you think it was the injuries? Do you think it was something else?
I think, honestly, I think it's so many high-stress innings. Because you think about it.
So many close games.
Yeah, there's so many close games. So, like, every pitch, there's so much emphasis on every pitch. You know, DVH talks about it all the time. Well – you know, he was kind of cruising. We let him go a little bit. Not a lot of high leverage pitches. You know, just kind of out there throwing. There's a difference in pitching in a 7-0 ball game and a 0-0 ball game. I mean, the intensity is there every pitch. Where, you know, I think Hagen all year, Friday night, I mean, he was the man pitching, and he wasn't getting a lot of run support.
That's 2-1, 1-0 on every game.
Yeah, so every pitch, there was so much emphasis. I mean, one mistake, and I tell you what, Matt, I think that wears on you. And I think the same with the bullpen. You look at some of these guys coming out of the pen, they came out in a lot of high leverage situations. There's not a lot of easy pitches being thrown, and I think that just really wears on you in the course of the season. Now, I'm not making an excuse for them, I'm just saying it's factual. You know, when you get to June, and I thought they did a great job of managing Hagen's pitches, but he's a max effort guy. Every pitch he throws, he's not like an Isaiah Campbell smooth delivery. I mean, he's max effort. So I think when you get into June, I think it starts to wear on you.
So you need a better lineup during the regular season to help your pitching in the postseason.
Yeah, I think, well, you need a more productive lineup. I think we had the pieces there. I just don't think we ever fully clicked. I really don't. I tell you what, we clicked against SEMO.
They did that. And you know, they had some games toward the end of the year where it was going well, but then you know, you'd it was never consistent. You'd score 9 runs against Mississippi State, and then you'd come back and it was off again the next game, and that was the tough part. Some of that's due to pitching. Let me ask you this: you know, like, we saw Ty Wilmsmeyer at the end of the year; he was their best hitter in the regional, maybe. But he wasn't always in the lineup. The lineup was constantly in flux throughout the season, trying to find the right pieces to give him consistency. Does that affect the overall play of the offense throughout the year? If you don't have a consistent lineup.
I'll tell you, as a player, there's no better feeling than knowing you're going to be in the lineup that next day. There's just something about it. And, you know, if you – you know, now – competition breeds success, you know, so there's so much competition for each starting position. You can look at it two ways. As a player, I liked going to the yard knowing I was in the lineup. There was just nothing. There's no better feeling than you go to bed at night. Boy, you sleep good knowing where you're going to be the next day, where you're hitting in the lineup, where you're playing. That's a comforting feeling as a baseball player. When you don't know that, it's tough. And I'm not knocking DVH. I mean, all year he was trying to find the right mix of players. And he kept saying, I want someone to take that position. Someone take center field. Someone take left field, you know. And it just never really – it didn't materialize, really. But you know, I was proud of Ty the way he finished up. He found a way to get on base. And, boy, once he gets on base, I mean, he's a weapon. I mean, there's so many things he can do.
I think there were three errors in that first SEMO game, and all three of them were whenever he was that bad, and he got on all three times. And I think maybe his speed probably causes a fielder to maybe rush his process.
Oh, they look up. They feel that ball, and they look up. You can see their eyes come off the ball and look at Ty running down the line, and like, oh, I got to get rid of this thing.
We got many. We got a lot more to come here on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. We'll look forward to 2025. Like I said, we'll talk about the College World Series and what we've seen from the postseason so far. But first, a word from our sponsor.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back in. The College World Series begins on Friday up in Omaha. It's going to be four SEC teams and four ACC teams. And if you looked at the polls throughout the season, this probably shouldn't surprise you a whole lot. Florida is a surprise being in the World Series. I would say the other seven teams are not surprises. They were teams who have been pretty good throughout the regular season. But, you know, it seemed like every time that I would write those poll stories throughout the regular season, Bubba, it'd be, you know, top 11 teams. There'd be five from the SEC. There'd be five from the ACC. There might be eight total SEC teams in the top 25, seven from the ACC. These two leagues this year, and really for the last, I would say, 10 years, have just totally dominated college baseball. And it makes you wonder, are we going to see more of this in the World Series? You know, because what's happening is that the SEC teams and the ACC teams, to a lesser extent, are pouring so many resources into baseball that whether it be NIL, whether it be top head coaches, top assistant coaches, facilities, whatever, you know, you name it, they're becoming the attractive place to play for players. Yeah. And so I wonder how some of these other conferences are going to be able to keep up with these two conferences, because, you know, maybe we're overgeneralizing things here with all eight being from those two conferences, but really it's kind of a microcosm of what we've seen for a decade.
Well, you look at the shift from like back in the day when I played, you know, it was West Coast. You had all those West Coast teams would dominate. You had Arizona State, Arizona. You had, oh my gosh,
Fullerton,
Irvine. Cal State Fullerton. Yep. I mean, all those teams were good every year, and it's shifted now. And you know, and you hear the people out on the West Coast complain because SEC gets all the notoriety. Well, it's justified. Look, every year
they get the players too. You know, something that stood out to me. I was in College Station, and it was like Gabe Gackel's pitching from Aptos, California, and Gavin Grahovac has come in from California. And I mean, there were so many Californians. It's like, I really think the TV component here is a big deal. And I wonder, well, but the TV component, I'll say on this topic for a second, they see what's going on in the SEC, and they might turn on a Southern Cal game, and there's 150 people in the ballpark.
Right.
They want to go be part of that. Yeah. And then they also see the number of prospects that are coming out of SEC and ACC schools and going into the major league draft. I mean, it seems like every year Arkansas's got 10 or 11 players. Tennessee's got 10 or 11 players. Florida, LSU, the same. They want to go there where they see people being developed.
Well, you talked about the atmosphere at A&M. Did you watch the Oregon A&M game?
I did.
Oregon's up 8-4.
Oh, man,
and
the crowd
got into it. And I'm sitting there with my wife and son watching it, and she's like, how many people are in that stadium? And I said, I don't know, probably around 10,000. They announced it like 7,800.
Yeah, I believe that.
But it looked like 50,000, sounded like 50,000 fans. But that poor Oregon pitcher.
It's just the loneliest place in the world. Is that mound in that ballpark?
Absolutely. I mean, it was like that back in the day at the old ballpark. But I tell you what, it was crazy. And you watch those pitchers just melt down. They could not find the strike zone. And I honestly felt bad for the guy because they left him out there. I mean, it was 8-4. I want to say he walked four and hit one. Mm-hmm. Then they bring in some dude. He walks the first guy and then gives up a grand slam, which was kind of cool. They gave up a grand slam to the guy that took Braden Montgomery. I hate that dude got hurt, Braden Montgomery.
Yeah.
I hate that he got hurt. But the guy that replaced him hits a grand slam.
Caden Kent. You know, it's Jeff Kent's son, right?
I did not
know
that.
Yeah, it's Jeff Kent's son. But I called that grand slam. We've got a group text with a bunch of people that we work with, and, you know, we're watching all these regional games, and it's like, hey, you need to turn it over here. And so it's like, this feels like a spot where they're going to give up a grand slam because they're throwing so many pitches out of the zone, they're going to hang one over the middle of the plate.
Yeah.
And sure enough, boom. And that totally changed. It kind of felt like a Charlie Welch moment.
Yeah.
Didn't it? I mean, it was a different kind of game, but it was a similar type of situation in that, you know, it's a tight game, and then all of a sudden you got walks, and you got to put one over the plate, and when you do, the hitter's ready for it.
Well, I say all the time, I can look at a guy and tell if he's a hitter or not. And when they showed a close up of the Oregon pitcher, that poor dude looked, there was fear on his face. I mean, he just did not want to throw the ball. It just did not look like a – like I can look at a Gabe Gackle. And I think there was one time all year I saw Gabe look uncomfortable on the mound. Mm. This guy did not want the ball. Like, you look at Hagen, Hagen's dominant. I mean, he looks like he's going to dominate you. You know, Caglione steps up to the plate. Caglione looks like he owns you before he even swings a bat. I mean, there's guys that have that look. Those poor Oregon pitchers did not want to throw that ball, Matt, and that place was crazy, and it was fun to watch, but it was painful at the same time.
You know, they're about to renovate that stadium. They're about to make it bigger in College Station.
Wow.
I mean, in fact, when they came, I believe I've got this right, when they came to Fayetteville in 22, Schlossnagel, it was 22, maybe it was 23, but anyway, is 23. Schlossnagel brought one of his ADs with him. You know, when they looked around the ballpark, he had actually done this when he was at TCU too, when they were here for the regionals in 19. Yeah. Del Conte, who's now the AD at Texas, I believe that he accompanied with them here, and they were getting ready to do some ballpark renovations in Fort Worth. And so then he gets the job at A&M. They bring somebody here, and they look at Baum, and they're getting ready to add some more seats there. I think it's going to look a lot like Baum, where you're probably going to have seats all the way down each foul line and maybe some more seats out in the outfield. It's already one of the tough places to play in the SEC, but I think it's about to be considered right there with Fayetteville, Starkville, Baton Rouge, Oxford, those types of ballparks.
I think their fans do a great job of just getting on the other opponents. Now, I didn't like when they got on Cooper Dossett. When he got hurt, and then they started the ball five chant. I didn't like that. I thought that was classless. That's Razorback fans wouldn't have done that. I don't know. But, I mean, it's a tough play. It's a tough environment play.
It's the best environment I've ever experienced for college baseball.
Really? It's pretty impressive. But you would think it seems bigger than 7,800.
It does.
It really does.
It's about to be a lot bigger.
Yeah. So I still like Baum Walker better.
The double deck nature of it kind of adds to that a little bit too, because it does feel like everybody is right there on top of you. So A&M's there. Did you see Florida Clemson, their game two in their super regional?
Yeah.
Game of the year, in my opinion.
I was actually mowing, and I was listening to the Florida broadcasters, and they did a really good job. I like me and Phil. But and I listen to other guys, and I don't like most broadcasts.
I listened to North Carolina the other night, and I had this thought: it's like, how on earth does a program at North Carolina not have a better broadcast than this?
I listened to a few really bad ones, but I actually got the guy's number from Phil and texted him after the game and just said congratulations. And I just told him, you know, I really enjoyed. They did a really good job. But so I'm listening to it, and finally I couldn't take it anymore. I went inside and watched the last few innings.
Did you see the catch?
Yes.
Were you watching that live?
No, I went inside to watch the replay. That's when I went inside, after the catch.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I went inside and then I left and I came back inside after the catch.
So if you didn't see it, Clemson, the same player for Clemson, their center fielder, he hits a two or a three-run home run in the top of the ninth that ties the game, sends it into extra innings. And then in the 10th, he makes a Willie Mays-style catch up against the wall that was – probably the best college catch I can remember.
Yeah.
The moment, everything. If he doesn't make the catch, Florida's got a runner in scoring position, and Florida wins the game. Now, Florida ultimately ended up winning that game in the 13th, but I hated the ump show in the game. I did not think the umpires handled the two situations very well. Number one was the collision with the Clemson base runner and Caglione in the second inning of that game. And then in the 13th inning, throwing out Jack Leggett, of all people. I mean, my gosh, the guy hasn't – I know he's back as a volunteer coach at Clemson, but he probably hasn't been ejected from a game in 10-plus years. And he gets thrown out. And I think what he was upset about was that the Clemson guy hits a home run that puts them up in the top 13th. He slams his bat down toward his dugout, which is permissible, but he gets a warning. And I think what Leggett was upset about was that Caglione had done the exact same thing in the first inning, and there's no warning issued. And so I think that's where all of that kind of came from. And then, you know, the replay has got to get figured out by the NCAA on these quote-unquote benches clearing situations, because we saw it in Georgia, Mississippi State earlier this year. It was like a 37-minute delay. It was an 18-minute delay in the Clemson-Florida game the other day. And quite frankly, the guys who get thrown out in those situations should not be thrown out. Yeah. The Clemson base runner, okay, so should he go over there into the fracas? You know, probably not. But you're a baseball player. You're going to get in there and stand up for your guy.
Right.
There's nothing that he did, though, in that situation that warranted an ejection.
Yeah.
Nothing. And to me, spending 18 minutes on a review when no punches are thrown, a couple of guys just push each other in the chest, I mean, what are we doing here? And it affects the flow of the game.
I agree. I think just play ball. You know, just let them play. You know, break it up. Say, okay, go back to your dugouts. Let's go. That's baseball. That's a heated game. Let them play the game. I'll tell you what, the thing that stood out for me was the left-handed pitcher they brought in, Clemson brought in, he struck a guy out. I want to say it was in the 12th inning.
Oh, he yapped at the
– And he points dugout. At him, and he ran his mouth. And I looked at my son. I said, Dalton, look at that. I said, the baseball gods, just watch what happens. And the next inning, he got walked off on. Yeah. I thought it was awesome. You don't do that. Why do you point at him? Who did he strike out?